Yeah, Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden, back with Jay. Our good friend Todd was unable to make it due to a problem in the family. And Todd, if you're able to listen, we hope you're feeling, no, I know you'll be feeling fine, but I hope Mom's good and all's working out, and that we'll get you on the show again real soon. We need your expertise on this codependency. You can correct all the stuff we do wrong or say wrong here today if you... I'm just kidding, folks. I think we know what we're talking about here. One of the things that's important in the whole realm of control, you know, who's in control, who's not, it's really important, especially for the codependent, for that person that just has that sense that they have to fix everything and make sure everything's perfect and running and all that. That person needs an outlet too, you know. Obviously there's some anxiety and there's some different mixes of mental situations going on when somebody has that sense that they really, you know, whatever they can do to fix a situation, to rescue someone, to write something, they just have to do it. And they need to express their sense of that in some way, and you know, in a support situation, maybe like this, maybe with a special kind of counselor specializing in that sort of thing. Again, we've had great success with that kind of thing in our own fellowship at Sharing the Burden, just by virtue of the fact that people come in and they express, you know, we sit around a table similar to what we do here right in the radio station, and rather than me doing all the talking like I'm doing today, it would be everybody sharing for an equal amount of time about whatever the topic was on the table. But when people are able to express their own feeling, knowing it's not implication, it's not someone else's feeling, no one's judging them, no one's going to look down upon them because they say something in some way that someone else won't understand, or they think someone else won't understand. So by establishing that kind of an emotional freedom zone of expression, people tend to be able to really express, and over time, as they do express, I think they learn, or, you know, I did anyway, that, you know, I had to use some of these slogans, you know, for instance, think, for instance, stop, you know, and I basically had to, you know, stop and think about what I was going to do, especially if emotion was involved in the whole, you know, whole situation. In other words, if I was going to react with some emotion, I had to build a way in me that would say, you know, behind the scenes, well, Scott, it looks like temperature's going up a little bit. You're a little bit of anxiety there. Probably whatever's going to come out of you at this moment is not going to be the right thing. It'd be best that you would back away and not react, and you know, evaluate the situation. Give yourself a little bit of time, a few breaths, whatever it takes. Maybe you have to leave the situation. Maybe you've got to go away and come back at it. But to react and to respond with the anxiety, with the emotion and so on, most certainly be wrong. Even if it's something that seems favorable, it will be wrong from your projection standpoint, because you're giving out something through emotion rather than on a, you know, an even keel, an even baseline of a tranquility or peace. So, you know, to go away and then come back, and then you know, you know, it must not only take a second, but then you know your presentation to follow is based on being cool, having thought about the situation, and you can truly respond rather than react. Because reaction in most of my life ended up in you know, angry feelings. I wouldn't necessarily do anything, you know, even outwardly, but inwardly, the vibes coming off me wouldn't have been good. And you know, we hear talks about aura and all these other things, and I use this often even on the airs, that you know, what you are speaks so loudly I can't hear a word you're saying. So often we're talking and we're spouting stuff out there, but if it's coming from emotion, people pick it up. You know, it's like we have antennas for this kind of thing. And you know, we see it in the jails all the time. The moment somebody on our side, you know, somebody who's involved in facilitating gets a little nervous or something, the inmates pick it up immediately, you know. So, like, it has to be addressed, because otherwise everybody hides emotionally and nothing gets done.
No, so, for sure, right.
So, yeah, so the whole, you know, if we're controllers, we've got to find ways to use the, you know, slogans or something like that to stop us in our tracks, you know. And what I do, Jay, is I, and you've probably seen the sheet there where we got a whole bunch of, you know, one-liners, but there's also a stop sign on there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of a pre-slogan, even in a sense. And we developed that. There was about four of us in a jail, in a detention center. And three of them were, you know, in orange, and I was, as I always am. And we thought about the slogans, and it was actually me, because, you know, I had a history of, you know, letting things build up for long periods of time and then getting angry. I mean, not necessarily break down the house or shoot somebody or anything like that, but the anger would get a good control of me, and I'd have a hard time getting back on track. So I learned that I needed to find this way to detect the eruption of emotion, if you will, especially negative emotion, and to put the brakes on right away. And I thought, you know, all these little one-liners like, you know, but for the grace of God, or one day at a time, or live and let live, or how important is it? Like, all these little liners were really, really wise things. And but if I'm getting angry, you know, never mind five words or three words or four words or a sentence, that's not coming to me. You know, as long as I'm in the process of getting warmer and hotter, the words aren't coming, just the, you know, the red or whatever it is. And so, but if now, you know, that stop sign, the second I'm emotional, it's almost simultaneous. I see the stop sign and it's red. And for me, it's Scott, stop, you know. And that's enough for me today to take a few breaths and back out and just know I'm going to be going in the wrong direction if this keeps up. So I learned that I can either, you know, clam up, or, as I said, just take some time to breathe and not worry so much about making a mistake as worrying about presenting, you know, from an honest, even keel kind of personality. And otherwise, it's... everything is kind of a lie, isn't it?
It is.
You know, like, that's if true. We're angry and present or talk or do whatever. And you must see that too. Sometimes on these shows, there's always controversy.
And
how it's handled. I think you'll see, like, when we have, and we don't all think the same thing or think the same way, but quite often someone's, you know, a little more one way than the other, and so on, and it could be a, you know, it could develop into anything, but it rarely does, because we all know that at the end of the session we're going to love and respect everybody as much as we did in the beginning, and, you know, to literally pounce on someone because of their take on something is simply wrong. In your life, Jay, when you look around and think about, you know, where there are controlling situations, can you think of any instances, like, in your own life, just off the top, that, you know, other than getting somebody in trouble, can you think of anything where there's a kind of a control that goes on? Maybe, I don't know, maybe you've seen it in certain professionals, for instance, or like that. A lot of them are, actually, and I don't know. Have you had any?
There has been, you know, times where, you know, because I've had experience at nursing homes and stuff like that, and there's been times where, yeah, there's been some control issues there, and because you're, you know, in the business of caregiving for seniors, and sometimes you feel like you have to, you know, kind of control their life, like, you know, they.
Yeah.
You know, these seniors have their own independence. They, you know, can think for themselves and that sort of thing. And you, you know, come across, you know, family members who are, you know, very controlling, and, you know, they come to visit, you know, very rarely when they come to visit their, you know, I can see how the relationship between, you know, the daughter and the parent and that sort of thing. And, you know, that's always
dicey.
Yeah, it is. It can be. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so visible, isn't it? Like you say, you see it, and you see a basically comfortable person all of a sudden very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just
sure.
Because someone else is talking for them, for instance.
Right. Know, for sure.
You know, and that's. I remember reading up or somebody telling me in a forum. I think it was about people developing Alzheimer's. You know, and how the offspring would often be trying to control them in that, and it mm-hmm. just exacerbates, makes the situation worse. And they would, I remember, well, like, I can't get them to wear these clothes they want to wear, and I would say, well, let them wear whatever they want. You know, I mean, as long as they're not going to die of heat or something over putting on several layers of clothes. I mean, you know, whatever makes a person comfortable in this life. You know, if we don't have to take it away from them, why do we, you know? Why do we try and make other people look the way we think they should look so that we feel comfortable and they don't? You mm-hmm. mean, what what logic is it, really? No. Is there in it, really?
You exactly.
know, when you think down to the bottom. And sadly, I think we all have bits and pieces of that. We project ourselves into another life. You know, we look at that person and what we're really doing is we project. We put ourselves inside of them and try and make them act like we think really how we want them to act so they'd be more like us. That's really what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, that's really what the goal is, yeah, right.
yeah, it's like everything, you know, and the bottom line is if we have an opinion, and we all have opinions, if we have an opinion, it's really just an expression of how we would like to see things go, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like to admit that. So expressing our emotions instead of controlling them is super important. But in many cases, it's, you know, where do you go and how do you do that? And that's what we do here at Sharing the Burden. That's what most support philosophies try to do. But there's humans in all of those too, and let's face it, we who end up being caregivers of one sort or another, we have a bit of that in us, or we probably wouldn't be going into that. We probably wouldn't be trying to make better lives for other people. And I think until us, like in our programs, there's always a spiritual peace that we rely on, regardless of what that is. But you know, we rely on the spiritual aspect to make the difference, such that we don't have to be in control. Mm-hmm. That we can, you know, do what we're trained to do and do it the best we can do it, and then and leave it alone. You know, go away without turning someone else's opinions, thoughts, feelings, someone else's lives into baggage for us to carry around. Mm-hmm. We got enough of our own, you know. But without knowing those things, I don't think we can healthily get into a caregiving situation and in and out of it in a healthy way. I don't think it's possible. Like if we're taking on their stuff, you know, it is brutal. Let's see what else we got here. One of the things, Jay, I've got to mention quickly before I forget, is that and if you're willing and so on. But anyway, I'll be going over to Hummingbird Hub, which is a great outfit a couple doors down, where they're trying to bring community together in a lot of different ways, but mostly, I would say, in a healthy educational way, a way of wellness for all, but kind of creating some collaboration between different outfits that offer different sorts of support and help around Stouffville and beyond. So we're going to go over there, and for anyone who would like to meet us, or maybe express a little, learn a little more about Sharing the Burden, hopefully learn how to start a meeting here locally, and anything like that, just come and a bit of discussion, be over there for about half an hour, probably from 11:10 to 11:40 or somewhere in there. And as I say, even call into Hummingbird Hub. That's a 6331 Main Street, by the way. And I think Jay and I will be over there for a bit. And
we sure will. Yeah,
I'm glad he came along there, because I wasn't sure. But I can only talk for Scott, you know. I mean, that's not what I'm preaching here today. So,
but yeah, no, I'll be there at the Hub, and looking forward to meeting anybody that wants to come by and learn more about Sharing the Burden. And Super. Whistle FM.
You know? Super. Yeah. While we're thinking about, other than Scott here, Jay, thinking about you and the kidney situation, where you're at, and how about a little bit of an update, just where you're at, because we know we spoke earlier about, you know, signs of things that may be indicators that you'll be going on to dialysis at some point in the future, and but ultimately it's a kidney you'll need, and you know, for people who possibly may be donors to be thinking about. You know, you or anybody in your situation, really, but maybe give us a bit of an update on your situation that might help some people out there to understand a bit.
Oh, for sure. Well, as far as I know, from the last blood test, I'm about 12% kidney function left, so it's, you know, getting down to a pretty, you know, low point, and so soon they're thinking that dialysis may be in the future. Usually dialysis starts when it's down to about 6 to 9%, so I'm getting, you know, pretty close, but, you know, not... still, you know, doing, you know, well enough to be able to, you know, manage without dialysis. But some signs that, you know, the kidney is failing. I get short of breath. My blood pressure is a little bit on the high side. I get, you know, swelling in my feet and ankles and that sort of thing. So those are, you know, signs of, you know, kidney failure. And having, you know, gone through this before, I think I'm more aware of what to look for, you know, this time. So now I'm hoping that this summer I don't need dialysis. They're keeping a close eye on things, but you know, they want to start the discussion about dialysis and what my options are. So I had what they call a fistula put in my arm to connect a vein and an artery together to prepare me for the machine to that will clean the blood and do things that the kidney normally does do when it's functioning well. So there's a couple of options for me. I could either go into the hospital. I went to the hospital before when I got a kidney 19 years ago. Got a kidney from my sister, and so that's what's been failing within the last year. But I went to, you know, the hospital before 3 times a week, 4.5 hours per treatment. But now there's better options for me to be able to do it at in the comfort of my own home. I could do it while I'm sleeping. You know, so there is more options where I can. It's not going to affect, you know, me. Doing my volunteer work here at Whistle FM and other things, I can have more flexibility with the diet and that sort of stuff. So, you know, that's something I'm, you know, considering right now. So I just want to see what my options are and, you know, what my options are in the meantime to stay healthy, to, you know, watch my diet and, you know, those sort of symptoms. So they want to do it all they can to kind of, you know, keep the kidney going. But I go see the doctor in July, so we'll see where I'm at then, and, you know, kind of, you know, decide if anything else needs to be changed, or if dialysis needs to, you know, be started soon, or where I'm at with that. So
that's great, Jay, and you know, thanks for being open and candid with that, and you know, we need you around here, so you gotta make no mistakes.
yeah.
I'm just kidding, but folks out there, seriously, you know, think along these lines, and there's always someone who, you know, has the sense that they'd like to do something like that, donate a kidney and so on. And I would suggest you find Jay and talk about it, even if it's not you, if you've heard about it or whatever. But, you know, you need education. You need to know what's involved, what it's all about, and how it might work. You know, Jay'd be the guy to talk to, and I'm sure you can reach him through the radio station or...
Find me on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, contact him on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah.
Happy Jay, is that how you look on Facebook?
Happy Jay is one way to find me there, or Jason Rumble, and you know, dialysis, it's a treatment option. It's, you know, it's great that they have dialysis that will keep me, you know, alive, but, you know, the ultimate goal is to get a transplant, and well, one of the first things is to make sure that I'm healthy enough to get a transplant, and but the actual donor has to go through a physical. Like it's head to toe physical, and it takes some time. I might take 5-6 months. It all depends on how things are going. So and you have to find out what your blood type is and that sort of stuff. But it's a big decision to make, and it's the testing you have to go through, and if there's any issues that to deal with that. But if you're in fairly good health, then you would definitely be a good candidate for sure.
Great. Yeah. Thanks again, Jay.
No problem.
Back to our codependency for a bit here. One of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about was, in my sense of how this sense of control can lead people down the road and into, addiction and, ultimately death in many cases. And it goes this way, I believe, anyway. I think everybody really is codependent, okay, to a degree or another. Firstly, meaning that we all innately want to stay alive, and we want control of our health and of our own lives, really. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is, for many of us, is we see the need to be in control of our own lives, or we think we need to be in control of our own lives, and we go pretty hard on making things go the way we think they should go. And of course, they don't. That's the way life is. I mean, things just don't go the way, I don't care who you are, that parts of it just aren't going to work out. And in that, unless you're the perfect person, and I've not met you, and if you're out there and you think you're that way, I was going to say, don't find me. But I'm just kidding, because some people think that they're doing pretty well, and many are. But generally, we see where things go astray, and for some of us, that bothers a lot more than it does bother other people. But generally, what happens anyway is we work really hard on ourselves, and we focus on ourselves. And at some point, we either realize that maybe we should kind of share the wealth, or maybe there's purpose in our life, and there's a lot more to life than me having everything go my way. So, but the fact that I fail at it, for many anyway, it's pretty serious. Mm-hmm. And we'll look for other things to control, because we can't really control ourselves. So we reach outward, and the obvious is relationships. Try to mm-hmm. control the people on the other side of the relationships. We call it trying to control people, places, or things. Mm-hmm. To make it pretty simple. And why we're doing it is because the feelings we're having on the inside, we don't seem to be able to appease or to heal or whatever. So we reach outside to try and control other things to make us feel better on the inside. And mm-hmm. that's another description of codependency, actually. But what happens then is we ultimately will have to fail in that too, because mm-hmm. we cannot control other people, and we cannot we our way all the way through it if we're expressing, because the we part is great. We need we to survive in life. I can't do it alone. You can't do it alone. We need people, and we need a higher power. We need a sense of godliness, spirituality, something else you can rely on other than the guy next door, because, we're taught to love our neighbor, but you don't have to like them all, and that sort of thing. So anyway, now it's that second phase where we're trying to control all these other things outside, and ultimately we'll fail at that. So, when we don't analyze it this way, but I think this is what goes on in the mind. We say, well, Scott, you realize you couldn't control absolutely everything, even in your own life, even when you said, you were going to do this, and this is how it was going to go, and so on. When it didn't, you didn't feel very good about that. So you reached out and you tried to control some other things, and ultimately you found that as you tried to work on the control of relationships, that what would happen is the relationships would fail. People don't want to be controlled, even if they think they do. Too much of it will push them away. So, I joked about something I sent out recently and said, are you codependent or do you have a lot of friends? because generally codependent people, and I was that way for a long time, and I found myself alone a lot, and really it was, in a sense, for some reason, I because I analyzed everything so much, I felt I had better ways, and I just had to express them to the people who would be involved. And you know, it's really a form of control, you know. And much as I may have loved them, I was trying to make them the way I thought they should be, and probably which was more like me, you know, because I'm smart, you know what I mean? That kind of nonsense, you know. So, but anyway, so ultimately what happens is it's a failure kind of feeling, you know, and I'm not cutting it. Plus, my control issues, my want to have everybody be a certain way and so on, have created an isolation for me, which maybe I didn't like, you know. So we become alone, you know. We're not in control. How do we get rid of this? It's a horrible feeling. How do I get rid of that, you know? And that's when we'll find an escape, you know, of some kind. Maybe we'll drink. Maybe we'll drug. Maybe we'll get into sexual relationships. Maybe we'll gamble. Maybe we'll exercise. You know, maybe it'll be our bodies, our beauty, or lack of it, whatever it is. And what'll happen is, we'll sense, especially if we're compulsive, we'll sense that we need more and more of this escape, you know. And if we get it through exercise, for instance, as I've been able to do, and now in a positive way, what we're really doing is we're creating what Jay and I were talking about before the show, something like the runner's high. We hear about that once in a while. You know, how can you possibly run 26 miles and, you know, in a marathon or something? And there are many times in a marathon where somebody who's been a runner for many years will, you know, feel exhausted, yet they'll get another wind and even euphoria for a time. And I've learned lately that there's something the body creates called anandamide. And it is actually like the equivalent of marijuana, which is manufactured in our own bodies. And we get the high side from that. And it is, folks, I've experienced that running those marathons in the past, that, you know, you can be absolutely done, but you know you're quite capable of running 20 miles. That last six is always almost negotiable. But anyway, you know you can do the 20, and you'll get to 12, 13 or something, half dead, and then all of a sudden, you'll get that euphoria, and you'll, at the end of the 20, you want to run another 20. You know, it just feels like that. You just feel so great. So anyway, that does exist in people, and that's probably why we who take to exercise to help with this escaping sort of thing find it very satisfying, even though it wears our knees and bodies and everything else out at the same time. So like, there's always ways around it, but what happens often is, the method of escape will become a compulsion, and over time, for those of us, and again, only for those of us who are predisposed, in other words, we can call it an addictive personality, we can call it, being addicted to a drug, or the alcohol, or the runner's high, if you want, you know, and we'll just do more and more and more of this, whatever this escape is, until one day we may decide that we cannot do this thing. Maybe it's making us sick if it's booze or drugs or something. Maybe we're told we're not going to make it if we don't stop doing whatever we're doing, whatever it is. Or we've lost everybody, or we've crossed another line, become psychotic and so on, and are really in trouble. So, you know, but what happens is we cross that line and then we can't stop the thing. Especially if we're the predisposed, you know, if we are one who falls into those things. And believe me, folks out there, don't let anyone tell you that there's anything you can't get addicted to, because it's just not true. You know, and you can describe it in a whole bunch of different ways, but there are things, if you're predisposed or you have the genetic flaw, if you have an addictive personality, you can get addicted to absolutely anything that takes you to a place where you feel better. And in my opinion, that really is the root of all of these big problems, you know. It's only the predisposed piece that forces some to go the distance and become full-blown addicts and alcoholics, and an awful lot of them end up in prisons and jails where we spend a lot of time. And, you know, they shouldn't be in jail, you know. I mean, they've had to do something because they got to that point where they had to get whatever their drug was, and they would do anything to get it. But that is kind of, You know, if you have a little baby and you've got to save its life, you'll do anything to save that baby's life.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and laws or anything else don't matter. That becomes the objective, and you have to do it. So, so anyway, that's a bit of a short on how it all works. I think we went the distance and didn't even allow any time for a second break. You think we'd be in trouble there?
No, I think we could still fit one in here.
Let's fit in a quick break, Dave, before we get out of here.